You're listening to Am I Cancelled?
So, put your headphones in, tune out the world, and get cancelled with us.
Oh, hey guys! It's just your friendly podcaster, Edward here. Special guest today. I think her main attribute would have to be her British accent, because we all know. Sorry, I can't help myself. We all know that having a British accent is one of the best assets a person can have on this planet. But today we are talking to Vicky Louise, host of the podcast Fuck Anxiety and Get Shit Done. That's right. We talked about so much. We talked about how she failed her driving test 5 times. We talked about how she got her MBA. We went through her timeline like we always do. We talked about her charity work. We talked about whether or not life coaching is a scam. She answered the question open and honestly. So, you know, sit back and find out what's going on. If you want to get some bomb-ass life coaching from Vicky, go ahead and go to VickyLouise.com. And right after this commercial break, we will sit down with Vicky and find out what she has to say.
If you would like to interact with the show, be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @am_I_cancelled. And also check out our Facebook page, Am I Cancelled?
Back to the show.
Vicky, welcome to the program. It's lovely to have you here today.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
I want to give like an overarching timeline of your life and just go a little piece by piece. So you received your Bachelor's of Science degree in Economics and Economic History in 2009. After that, you had a slew of jobs from 2009 to 2016, including partnering manager, analyst for responsible investment, sales, business development manager, and consultant. And before we get any further in the timeline of your life, I wanted you to explain that world for me, because it seems like you had a miserable time before you found your calling.
I feel like I didn't really have a miserable time. I just drank a lot. No, it was like I always thought, like, I was super good at maths and I liked business. So I did economics, and then I like fell into finance, and it was like a successful career. And I was like parent pleasing, people pleasing. I used to call it pop, like perfect on paper. Mm-hmm. And then I broke away initially to go to New York and leave finance to go for tech, like completely on the other side, where I was in this super aggressive sales role because I really love people. So I thought selling is going to get me more people. And then that didn't work out as planned. And I went back to London, back to finance, and quite quickly was like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And I think one thing I will say that I noticed about me compared to like my peers was I was really willing to leave a job I didn't like and go on to the next. And I was really willing to fail when people were saying like, oh, like, do you not need to be in a job for 2 years for your resume? And I was like, who the fuck cares? No, mm-hmm. I don't. Like, if I know I don't want to do this, I'm definitely leaving.
Interrupting the interview, I just have to say I love your accent. I love accents in general. Yay. So, in 2017, you began investing and becoming a life coach. You obtained a life coaching certificate from the Life Coach School. What steered you in that direction?
Yeah, so I actually left finance 2016. And I was December, like, of 2015, I was deciding between like coaching or therapy or counseling. I just knew I wanted to work more with people and help people. And it was literally a phone call from like my best friend's brother's best friend who'd left finance to be a hypnotherapist, like a really random story. And we got on the phone and I was like, I'm going to do all this research. It was like very, how I used to make decisions was very like, I need to do all the research and decide, and like really didn't trust that there's got to be a right answer. And he just said to me, like, we chatted and he said, if you had to decide right now, what would it be? I was like, well, I don't know because I'm not. And he's like, but just if you had to decide now. And I was like, oh, I guess I most resonate with being a coach. He's like, so why don't you just be a coach? And I was like, oh, yeah, I could just do that. Like, worst case, it like, look at my track record. If I really didn't like it, I would go and do something else.
Right.
So that's why I didn't also invest in the certification for a year. I was like, I want to see if I actually like it before dropping that investment. And what happened was there was a podcast, funnily enough, about the Life Coach School, and I was listening to it and I really wanted to go there. And then I spoke to them and they were really expensive and I was like, I'm definitely not doing that. And then so that was like a year in advance. Then right as it came to the deadline, I was like, shit, like this is the school, like I know exactly what I want to study by, exactly who I want to study it by. I'm gonna figure it out. So I did.
So you focus a lot on anxiety for coaching and moving past it. And you have a podcast named Fuck Anxiety and Get Shit Done. And in an interview that I listened to, not on your podcast, but in an interview I listened to, you stated that you failed your driving test 5 times. And I'm curious as to why you failed 5 times and what you did to get past it.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's such a good story. I was literally telling someone else the other day how I feel like I have this resiliency to failure. And that was definitely part of it. I'm a July baby. And in England, it runs September to August. And I was in a rush to get my license. So you could do this like 2-week crash course, such a bad idea. So I did the 2-week crash course and then failed. And then I tried to book again 2 weeks later and failed. And I was just rushing and I just wanted to get there and wanted to get there. And I was getting annoyed at myself that it wasn't happening quick enough and I wasn't taking like the responsibility. It's like hilarious because it's what I coach people on now. But I didn't know all of this was happening. I was just like, the world isn't fair and all my friends are driving. And then I had a break and then I went back to it. And yeah, in the end, I just stopped stressing. I set myself up for success. Like suddenly I was like, I'm not, the first few tests, I was like, I just want to book it as soon as possible, which meant I was taking driving tests in areas where I didn't know the roads. And then I was like, oh, I wonder if I like waited, even if it's a 4-week wait list, and did the driving test in the area where I know the roads, might that be better? And it was. So I think it was really like stopping rushing. Yeah, that was a big factor.
The listeners aren't going to be able to see this, but I want to know if that's a standard issued microphone from Life Coaching, the school, because I see it in a lot of pictures when I was researching something similar to it.
So it's not from the school, but it is the one that they recommend everyone buy. Okay. And it's so funny because I got mine a while ago. But like there have been times for like a 6-month period where it's like not available. Everyone's like freaking out because it's like, so I used to, I was also hired by them to coach for them about less than a year ago.
Right.
And so there's certain requirements that now, like you can see this, the listeners can't, but now I have like a professional background and I have the microphone and I have the light and all of this stuff because it was requirement. So that was quite good to, start taking shit seriously.
As for life coaching, when you do it, has it always been online or did that start because of COVID?
My business has always been online.
Okay.
I know some people that have done it in person that are now migrating to online. But to be honest, like even when I started, my clients were all over the world. Actually, to go back to that year of 2016. So I handed in my notice. I had 3-month notice period. And then I left England and traveled around. So my clients were all over, like even like New Zealand and Australia and the US and England. And so it was just always set up that way. And obviously that's been a blessing in recent times.
When you got your certificate for life coaching, what led you to deciding to attend the Smartly School of Business in 2018 to get your MBA?
Yeah. So I think I'd like always fancied an MBA and I love studying business. I just love studying anything. I'm a proper geek. I'll just confess that right now. And what I loved, so they contacted me and I dismissed it the first time. And the second time I was like, okay, let me look at this. And they have this really clever app. And that's the whole thing. It's like a new way of learning. And it really ties in with like a lot of how I studied previously, which is like not reading massive texts, but really answering questions. It's interesting because it's actually super similar to coaching. I think like me telling someone what they should do is not powerful, but me asking a question that allows their brain to think differently and problem solve is different. So Smartly and their app is really like that. I even contacted them at one point and thought about taking like a left tangent on my career and building like a coaching questioning app before I realized, like, leave the tech to the tech people. I've done enough tech. Like, right. This is where my skill set is. I'm good.
So speaking of tech, so you started a business with Gideon towards the end of 2018 called SipScene, which was a marketplace for social events where you could create social events, sell tickets, know who's coming in advance, and earn money. The business closed towards the end of 2019. Can you talk about what led to the closure and what you learned from it?
Yeah. So Giddy is actually my husband, and I relocated countries and continents to be with him. And like, it's quite hard to meet new people as an adult in real life.
Right.
And I really missed like going to people's houses. I didn't always want to go out to clubs and bars and restaurants and so on. So it's like the Airbnb model for social events. So it's like intimate social events where people can meet around a common theme. Like, I would do some Women Wine Wednesdays. We would have paint and sip nights, and like anyone could host. It's like a two-sided marketplace. We loved it, but we worked really hard, and it's not a high income, high profit business. It's a scale. The way we built it was scale. And what happened was we got married June 2019, and our goal was to take it to the US, and we got into an accelerator in Austin, Texas. So we like literally 2 days after our wedding, we packed up and moved out there.
You have been everywhere.
Worked everywhere, lived everywhere. So we got there, and I think we both completely underestimated living on the other side, not the other side of the world, but like far away without any family or friends, building this startup, like grinding, like doing these. Suddenly, like, the event stopped being fun, and it just became much more like, we have to succeed.
So
when we started the startup, that was when I had my anxiety and my panic attacks, which is what led to the start of the podcast. I was like, I don't have as much time to coach, but I want to make sure these tools are out there. But we said we're going to give it 6 months, and then we're either going to commit to living in the US for a few years, or we're going to leave. And ultimately it was like, we're going to leave. I obviously already had a passion and love for coaching. He's always wanted to be a pilot. We're now living in France. He's learning to fly. I'm doing my business.
You can tell that I've done the research on you, right? So I thought you were in London. I mean, I know you told me, because I got confused because you told me France time, right? When we were setting up the interview. And I have a friend who lives in Manchester, England.
I'm from Manchester.
Nice. And so I know the 6 hours ahead thing. So I was like researching you, and there was a lot of England things popping up. So I was just on the assumption that you were in London. I think a lot of your bios from past things say London in them. So that might have been where I got confused.
So France was a complete surprise COVID Brexit move unplanned in summer. So I've not updated any of my stuff.
Okay. I read your article on Medium about SipScene, and you were vehemently against having an app for it. So I wonder, do you think it would have been easier, or do you regret not having an app?
No, if anything, I regret even trying to build our own website. If I was to go back, and someone that we got a meeting with early on suggested it to us, and we were like, maybe not, like using something like Eventbrite, Meetup. There's already places with audiences.
Yeah.
Like for us, we didn't know how to build tech. We were always relying and paying. That's where all of our money went. Relying and paying other people. If you are a non-technical founder, don't build a technical product. For us, I think we would have benefited. And we did. We had a few thousand people in the community. But I think if we would have just focused all our energy on building out the community, then we could have raised investment and built the tech that side. And what tended to happen was every few months there was a problem with the tech, and it wasn't really working how we needed it to, and things were moving, and we kept having to use people from Upwork. And we didn't, it's very hard to spend money when you don't understand what's happening. But ultimately, I would say I love people and I love community. And now I am building a community around my coaching business, which is fun. But like, I never really wanted to build a tech product. So that would have been the difference. Maybe I even would have set it up as like a non-profit. Like, I would have done it I still care about connecting people.
Yeah.
But the whole technology, like, the startup side of things wasn't what drove me or him or where our skill set lay. So yeah, that's how I would have done it differently.
Yeah, it's funny. When I first discovered, I was like, what's this SIP scene? What's this? And I started trying to go to the website and it's like, what's happening? And then finally, the deep digging that I did.
Yeah
eventually I found out that it ended in late 2019, but I tried very hard to get to that website and it did not exist.
You can find the Facebook page still, and it's not, we've got loads of like glowing reviews from, like, we know people that like formed friendships, relationships, business partners, like best friends. Like, it was an amazing thing. I love all that side of things, but the pressure to make revenue when we were paying our hosts like 85%, I think at the beginning of a business, and this is one of the things that I coach people now, I coach a lot of entrepreneurs, like, mm-hmm. you have to make revenue so that you can live.
Yeah.
And then that takes away a lot of stress and pressure. It's like anything, like for everyone listening and for you, it's like, we have to take care of ourselves and our needs. We can't always put them last. And I think we completely missed the mark on that. You know, like a year later, you know, financially living like very, very, I joke with my husband, like we used to be in the supermarkets in Austin, like negotiating on what tomatoes to buy. Like, mm-hmm. no, we can't buy those tomatoes. And what was so brilliant is like when I went all in on my coaching business, I've now grown like a multiple six figure business in the last year. And we're like, what's happening? Like, we can buy the fancy tomatoes now. So it's really funny. But, you know, there were a few years where we were very, very tight.
Right.
I think it added to our relationship. But
now, is it organic tomatoes that you can afford now?
Are those the ones? Organic, okay. And the little ones.
Just want to make
like
sure.
Like, even the yellow ones.
That's great. You were a trustee for British Friends of Ruth and grew up heavily involved in Habenem Drar, two charity organizations. Can you explain what those organizations are and what experiences you gained from being a part of them?
Yeah. So Habenem, I was like, it's like summer camps and stuff.
Yeah.
So I went there from when I was 11 to 15. And then when you're 17, you're a leader. And when you're 20, you're like me and one of my friends. And we're like the head of the whole thing. So we trained the leaders and then managed the kids and the sites and all of that stuff. And then there were two people supporting us as well. So that was like a crazy, to be honest, that whole movement was like, had such a big impact on my like creativity, on my entrepreneurialism, on my teamwork, like all these things that I wasn't thinking of at the time. I was like, this sounds fun. Like, it was very high pressure. Like, at the end of the day, when we were 20, we were on a site with three other people our age, and then 17 to 19 year olds, and then 65, 13 year olds. Like, it was just bonkers.
Did you go to Israel for that?
So that was in England. But then when I was 18, I moved to Israel with them for 9 months with the movement for like a gap year. But yeah, it's like a Jewish summer camp supporting like socialism, Zionism, all that stuff.
What exactly does it mean to be a trustee for the British Friends of Ruth?
Yeah, like, so I think they were really looking for at the time, like, where was I? I must have come back from New York. And they were, so Root is a center in Tel Aviv for like alternative therapies. So in Tel Aviv in Israel. So for example, they're like healing people through like art classes and pet therapy and all these amazing things and everything from like kids to the elderly. They even have like homes for Holocaust survivors that are still there and like all the healthcare. So it's a really special place. As a trustee, like, typically you're going to be checking the finances and the reporting, but I also got to like, because I was like the young one, to like create events. Like, this whole, I feel like I do the same thing everywhere. Even when I worked in finance, I would create events for everyone just for fun. But like, create events, fundraise, raise awareness, social media, that kind of stuff.
So other podcasts that you've been interviewed on, they seem to talk and ask the same questions to you. Does that ever get boring for you to answer the same questions over and over again?
So I think what stops it from being boring is I always think about like the one person that's hearing it for the first time. And even if you listen to my podcast, there's a lot of themes that I repeat a lot because I know sometimes someone's just searching like how to stop comparing yourself to other people, and they're going to come across that podcast episode of mine and not know anything else. So, and I also don't do that many podcast interviews. I'll do max 2 a week and not every week. I think, but yeah, I guess there are very similar questions answered. But
there are a lot out there, and they all, it seems like they're all kind of anxiety type questions.
But I will say this is the most unique questions that I've had.
Well, thank you so much. But what I notice is a lot of times with you and with other guests, a lot of people like to ask about the profession only, and they don't really get into the person at all. And so what I try to do is have a unique experience where it's like, well, I'm interviewing you about you, not just this one thing that you do. So I try to do that.
I love that.
So these next two questions are not an attack. I'll say that.
Bring it. I'm ready. You've warmed me in. I feel trusting and comfortable now.
So there's a lot of people who've written articles claiming that life coach school and life coaches in general are a scam or part of a pyramid scheme. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to refute these claims and explain the legitimacy of life coaching as a profession.
Yeah, I love that question. So to defend the life coaching industry, here's the thing, right? Like, people want to create goals or change their life. Like, I never had therapy. It didn't call to me as something that I needed. But the idea, or like, not that I've got anything wrong with it, but I think like we forget that our human brains are all so different. It's not a one size fits all. And I think the more people we have creating solutions, the more solutions we have in the world, the more we help more people.
I think
that there are, you know, that there is a range of expertise and skills and all of that stuff. Like, yeah, the life coaching industry is not regulated.
Right.
But I do think in a way it's self-regulated. Like, you're not going to buy from someone who doesn't themselves and is like, maybe I could help you. I don't know. Like, we're not good liars as humans. I don't, you know, most people, like, we're not good at selling things we don't believe in. I'll see it time and time again. If you don't think you can help someone, you're not going to be able to sell them. But ultimately, like, life coaching is a solution for people. I think, like, why did I pick life coaching, right? When I thought about it, I thought about, I wanted to work with people, and this is like true of how I speak about anxiety, people that are functioning, that want to function better. It's not non-functioning to functioning, right? And I can even tell you personally in my experience, like as a student, as a client, I guess, as a client, I like had like a sexual trauma experience that like I kind of shoved under the carpet for 10 years and never spoke about. And then I met a sex coach and I was like, maybe one day, who knows? I don't know. And I just finished working with her. And it was like, for me, it was like, I loved not being seen as a patient. I loved that I could like speak freely and like just the kind of questions. I feel like I was still in responsibility to create my results. Now, that's not for everyone.
Right.
Some people are like, I just need to talk about it and that's it. And for me, it was like the right solution for me. Do I think life coaching is for everyone? No, I think there's different solutions for everyone. But I think the fact that like so many people get amazing results from it, like even like the Peloton, right? People love the Peloton. Do I think the Peloton is for everyone? No. So I think it's more like seeing, I think the more creative brains we have creating different solutions, the better. And that's why life coaching does have an advantage that there aren't really barriers to entry. And someone can stand up and say, like, so someone, you know, very dear to me, and she, like, she's grief coaching, and she's standing up and saying, hey, it's not just about these steps, it's actually other things. So because there's less rules around it, there's more room for creativity. And if every problem was already solved with a foolproof solution, there wouldn't be gaps for us to step in and try and solve them.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I guess, so I guess the main complaint, so I read a lot of these articles, and I guess the main thing was certain people who become life coaches and get these certificates, they don't have the proper training. The way that you explain it, it makes a lot of sense, because of course there's people in the industry that wouldn't want other people to be helping people and taking business away from them. That's one way to look at it. The reason they say it's a pyramid scheme is because how it's been described is that you become a life coach and then you try to recruit other people to be life coaches. So have you experienced that?
No, but it's interesting, because I don't think people try to recruit other people to be life coaches. But I think what happens is a lot of clients change their lives, decide that they want to have an impact and help other people. Like if you help someone like better their marriage, mm-hmm. like I'm not a marriage but coach, but if you help someone better their marriage and they've spent 10 years like suffering in this marriage and they've been able to change their relationship and enjoy it, there is probably like a 20% that are like, wait, I could help other people. And I do see that happen quite a lot. In my experience, I don't know any coaches that are actively trying to recruit coaches, but I definitely see it happen.
Is there any incentive to do that at all? Like financial incentive?
No. Like from who?
I don't know. This is what I've seen in all these articles. It's just like,
who would pay me?
I don't know. But I would assume like, well, that's what the articles say, and then that would be how you would structure the pyramid. But I mean,
yeah, I don't know who would be at the top of that pyramid. But what I could say, how you could see it a different way, because this has been true for me. Mm-hmm. Like I wish I'd hired a coach before I became a coach. I just didn't think of it. But what has happened in the last year is like I've started investing in more coaches. Yeah. Right. Like, so as I see my, I've been working in like a business mastermind and I worked with a sex coach. So like maybe in that sense, like I'm spending money back into coaching. But right. For me, it's like, if you see something work and get results, then of course you're going to spend money on it.
Yeah. And then the article that you posted related to that, you wrote about how a lot of people asked you if life coaching was a cult. And your response in the article was that, according to Google, a cult can be defined as something popular or fashionable among a particular group or section of society. But what about the more religious-based definitions? How would you answer the same question posed with those guidelines?
So give me the more religious-based definition.
I will give you the exact one.
Yeah, so in the meantime, I'll tell people. So how I posed my article was like, if it's a group of people gathering around a common cause to make the world a better place, then yeah, it's the best one. That was my whole joke around it.
Right. And I got that you were making a joke, but I was curious to see how you would answer if it was like, if they were more direct with you. Like, so the cult, the thing that pops up for me when I search cult is a system of religious and devotion directed toward a particular figure. And the definition you used, I would think is more like if you're talking like a movie or something and you're like, oh, that's a cult classic. Like it's,
yeah.
So if you were posed like, is there someone, are you drinking the Kool-Aid? Then how would you answer that?
It's like, there's two things that I thought of as you were speaking. One is like, it has to have one particular leader, like the cult leader,
yeah,
and everyone. And the second, I think, is like following them blindly.
Right.
Right. So it's like, that willingness to like sacrifice and do things and not question things and not challenge things. And I will say, like, in my pocket of coaching, the school that I went to, there was, you know, a head of the school, and now she's like stepping down more and more out of the business. But even that is interesting. Like, I can see her moving herself out of the business, and other coaches, like I said, I was even hired by them, stepping in. So it's less about her and more about the principle of coaching.
Okay.
And I think that what's amazing, we literally had this discussion. I had this discussion with a few coaches. Like, there's research out there that thoughts create feelings, and there's research out there that feelings create thoughts. Mm-hmm. And really, it's about like, can both of those exist? And how can we just use them to help our clients instead of there's a right way and a wrong way? And I think that's the difference that I see in my pocket of coaching. Is it's not like there's a right way and a wrong way and you're doing it wrong and you're going to get kicked out of the tribe. We're going to take your certification away from you.
Yeah.
So I would say that's the difference. I think there's probably like 20 key leaders in like the life coaching industry that all say different things, but yet you are able to take from each of them. You're not like only loyal to one. Otherwise you're kicked out.
Right. You don't have to drink the Kool-Aid if you don't want to.
You don't have to drink the Kool-Aid if you don't want to.
Well, I really appreciate you answering those two questions specifically and not being offended. I was a little worried about asking them, but your answers gave a new perspective and it was great learning. So
yeah, I love those questions.
So besides your continued life coaching and podcasting, what's next for Vicky?
Yeah, well, I love this because I feel like this year was a year of massive growth. And now I've like, well, firstly, I'm in France for the next year for sure. Don't know where afterwards, but open to getting surprised.
Before you continue, do you just like always being on the move?
No, I think I actively sort it out. Like, I've always made it happen. So I've wanted to move and then found the opportunity.
Okay.
Aside from the France was a surprise thing, but again, like, it's not far from England. Like, it's fine. France is actually a beautiful country. I've got to explore it more and not more because of COVID. But, you know, like, it's not a big dramatic. When I was 22, I moved to Australia. That was like a big move. And then 25, New York, 31, Austin.
I'm telling you, you're all over the place.
Yeah, all over the place. So, but there's always been like some intention behind it. And next to me, so now actually I'm in the middle now of group. So I don't work with people one-on-one anymore. That was like fully booked. And so I thought about how I could continue to help more people. So now I have a group program called Time Hackers, where I help people achieve rapid results in less time without the hustle. Right. And it's all about like how we make decisions, how we face failure, how we face anxiety, how we face our fears, and like, you know, how we manage our human brain, which is designed and programmed for survival in the wild. And I feel like, so next year, there's just going to be four of those launches. I've really simplified my business.
Okay. So I'm a current college student, and I am a class A professional procrastinator, I would say. I think my biggest issue is that it always works out for me. Like, there hasn't been consequences. So what would you say to me if I was like, I'm procrastinating, but nothing, there's no negative consequences of it so far?
Right. But it's like the habits that you are feeding in your brain of like putting things off and then working under pressure, and putting things off and working under pressure. Because the truth is, if you can get something, if you have 2 weeks to do something and you can get it done in 5 hours, do you think you're going to enjoy the 2 weeks more if you spend 2 weeks thinking about it and then cramming it in 5 hours, or you do it for 5 hours and then you have the 2 weeks off?
Yeah, I pretty much hate the whole time that I'm not getting it done, because I am feeling guilty the entire time.
Right. It's actually shit. It's actually not even fun. If it was fun, I would be like, have it. But it's, we feel like shit. And what we're doing is we're like building a shitty relationship with ourselves. I want you to think about like, if you were like doing a favor for a friend and they were like, hey, can you help me move my bed? And they were like, it needs to be done, you know, and you'd be like, today. Oh, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not going to do it today. Yeah, today. You know what? I can't be asked doing it today. Like, you just wouldn't treat another person like that. So why do we treat ourselves like that? And it's not about like the deadline or it's like really, it starts to weave this like shitty relationship with yourself of like criticizing yourself, mean talking yourself, not backing yourself, doubt, like all of this shit. And that's like, that's why I wouldn't do it. But again, I also did procrastinate. Like, I didn't come out the womb like this. I speak about these problems because I was chatting to one of my best friends, and like our mums were literally pregnant together. So we've known each other forever. Like, I was chatting to her a few months ago about something about being organized. And she was like, Vic, you weren't organized. I was like, what? Yeah. She was like, you were like the most disorganized person. I was like, what? Oh yeah, definitely.
Me?
100%. Yeah. So it's like all learnable skills. So I also wouldn't beat yourself up about it. I would be like, okay, if I'm being very honest, I'm going to have like a bit of guilt for 2 weeks and then cram it in 5 hours.
No, mine is, I'm insane. So I'll have like an essay due or something, like an important test essay or something. And I'll literally wait till like an hour before deadline to write like 4 or 5 pages, but I get it done. And I'm like, there's that little brief momentary, I did it. Look at me. Look how good I am. And then right after that, it's like, oh, but now there's this deadline and I know I'm not going to start it until day of.
Yeah. Because you see how it's like a crash. It's like crack. It's like the high and then the crash and the high and then the crash. And it's so interesting because you could just do that and be like, I'm just going to set an hour in my calendar. But listen, I was like the queen. I used to tell my mom, like, I work better at night. I would wait till everyone went to sleep. I would drink black coffee and I would like do my work then. And I was like, this is my time. This is my jam. Like, this is when I work the best. Like, that was how I would do it in my like GCSEs, which are our exams when we're 16. I got to the end of the year and I had to like borrow my friend's notes so I could like write them all out. And so, like, I hadn't done shit. Like, I really was a last minute person. Like, anything, all of this is just really learnable whenever you fucking decide to learn it. And you know what, you're 100%, I think we have this story of like, I'm a bad person if I don't get things done or if I procrastinate. And
right.
all that layer of judgment is more harmful than actually the procrastinating itself.
You know, it doesn't even make sense for me because there's no real correlation because I'm horrible with deadlines and procrastinating. However, I'm always like super on time for things or available for like if there's a club meeting or something or something I have to lead, then I'm right on it. But it's just those deadlines. I'm like, well, I have all this time. And you've already explained it, so you don't have to explain it again. But yeah,
why?
It's weird that there's no correlation. And it's not like, oh, I'm also really disorganized here like I am here. It's very strange. Why? There's no correlation.
Notice how you spoke about those two things, though. You're like, oh, I have all this time versus like this meeting is happening now.
Right.
It's just a decision. And that's what I mean by like, if someone else decides or someone else is involved, like even us two meeting here at a specific time, you'll right. make it happen. So when we don't make it happen for like a meeting we set ourselves, mm-hmm. we're feeding the like, I don't really matter. My time for myself isn't important
okay.
story.
So you fix the bad things in your life and you feel better. You feel like a better person.
It's just like if for example, like, because what happens as well is we reward like the bad behavior. So we're like, oh, yeah. I'm going to delay it. And then I'm going to watch Netflix, eat pizza, have yep. cookies. And our primitive brain is like, yeah, party. And then we like get to the deadline and we just get it done. So it's like rewards all around. Instead of, I'm going to get this done for an hour. And after I've done this for an hour, I'm going to go to that concert that I love. And then you're rewarding the right behavior.
You're right. It's like exactly backwards. It's like yeah. reward first. And deadline last. I want to know from you, out of the jobs that I mentioned earlier, or the jobs that you've had before life coaching, which one was the worst and why?
Yeah. So I'm trying to think, like, it's between two, right? So one, I'll just mm-hmm. speak about that. So one of them, I mean, it's going to be obvious which one. It was a super aggressive sales role. And I thought sales meant working okay. more with people. And so I was like, this is going to be really fun. I'm going to build relationships. But I was actually like trading technology hardware. So it's a lot of like right. quick calls and that kind of thing. And it was like in New York, and it was like very aggressive sales office oh, in New York, like hyper, not about relationships, like all like it, yeah. and it was like, it was a massive shock to what, to my expectations. It wasn't their fault. It was like my unrealistic expectations about sales being like madmen or something like that. I don't know, about people. And
did you have a script you had to follow?
No, I didn't have a script I had to follow, but it was like, no, I didn't have a script. Maybe that would have helped.
Yeah. The reason I went back to college is so I could get into broadcasting and radio because nice. I had horrible jobs that I hated the whole time. So I can totally relate to you. And yeah. it was actually one of the last jobs that I had was being on there with a little headset on the phone, reading a script to people, a lot of older people that couldn't hear very well. And I lasted there one day and was like, nope, yeah. nope. And then I pretty much was like, I'm going to go back to college. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. So sales jobs, I completely understand. They are the worst.
Well, like I said earlier, I think you have to believe in what you're selling. Like now, yeah. do I sell life coaching? Yeah. Do I love it? Yes. Like it's a completely different thing.
Right.
But also, even the way you said that, like I lasted one day, I would even paint that as like a good story of like, I didn't fuck around. I didn't stay in what I didn't one, I just got out. Like, that's not a procrastinator.
Can you just make an audio recording for me to listen to every day?
Yeah, it's called the podcast.
Fair enough. So, do you want to talk about the other job?
I would just say, so when it was just a matter of like, actually, when I started in finance at one of the companies, I had like an amazing team and I loved the people and it was super social and it was really fun. I had a lot of best friends there. So when I went back to it, I was kind of expecting the same thing, but it was quite a different kind of company and there was a lot more competition, let's say, within teams, across teams, all of that stuff. And again, it was like a bit of a slap in the face of like, my expectations were everyone's going to like be on the same. And there was a lot of bitching. And that's why I quite quickly decided mm-hmm. this isn't the environment for me. Like I don't really believe in like complaining and, you know, if I'm around it, I'll try and avoid it.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'll complain to myself. Like I'll grab a pen and piece of paper and write or like type furiously. But like mm-hmm. me saying it to someone else is just going to bring them down. We're going to end up in a shitty conversation that's not going to solve the problem. I would say, and again, like, big change for me was like, there's a big drinking culture around finance and tech and sales and all of this stuff. And I think that was like fun for a bit. And then I was like, I don't like, it's kind of, there was a Christmas where normally, because even in finance, I worked in the sales side where you take people for lunch and after work drinks. And at Christmas, it's like quite a lot. And then we had this one meeting in the morning and it was like mimosas or something. And I was like, I'm fucking done. Like, I'm like,
yeah,
it's different if you're doing mimosas with your friends or whatever. But I was like, my skin's gray. Like, I'm breaking out. I'm not sleeping. I feel nauseous most of the time. Like, I don't know if I'm sober or hungover. Like, I need get me the fuck out of here. Like, I'm done.
Right. Absolutely. Do you want to tell people where they can find you to hire you or just to learn more about you?
Yeah, sure. They can go to VickiLouise.com. It's VickiLouise. Don't know why my parents spelled it that way, but they did. So it's VickiLouise.com. And also on Instagram at VickiLouise__. And also the podcast, Fuck Anxiety and Get Shit Done.
You don't have to say what, but why the name change?
Oh, well, yeah. So it's my middle name. Louise is my middle name.
Okay.
And people, my surname is Yaffe, but it's pronounced Yaff. Like, it was just a hot mess everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then I was getting married and his name's a Harvey. I was like, Jesus, this is not getting any better. So I thought, I like my middle name. I've never got to use it. But I think it's funny because in America, it's quite a common thing to be like Sarah Louise.
Right.
So people think that, like, that's what I'm doing. But I'm like, oh, yeah. So people will call me Vicky Louise. I'm like, oh, it's funny because that wasn't my intention. But there we go. It's just easy for people to remember. There's no changing it anytime soon, whether we get divorced. No, I'm joking, but you know, like whatever it is. I'm keeping it clean.
So I know the UK is coming out with the vaccine a lot sooner than America is. Now, how does that work? Is France coming out with it anytime soon, or how does it work? What's the correlation there? And if it comes out soon, are you going to take it immediately? Or are you going to wait around and see what happens? What do you think you're going to do?
Yeah. So I don't know much about France because I don't speak the language.
Right.
So it was a surprise move. I know it's happening in England, which I think is great. I wouldn't personally take the vaccine while it's limited just because I'm like young and healthy. Do I hope mm-hmm. my parents can take it? Yeah. But for me personally, I'm not, it depends on the quantity, but if it's like limited in any way, like, other people can have it.
I give this staple question to everyone I interview for no reason. And it is, so I've had two co-hosts in the past and they were both female. One, I may or may not have gave a nervous breakdown. She didn't say that, but I assume. And then the other one quit before that. So I want to ask you an open-ended question. How can I make my female co-host more comfortable?
Well, it's interesting because as a coach, I would say, I don't know that you can give someone a nervous breakdown because that comes from their brain, their thoughts.
I like to think I have that power. No, just kidding.
You're like, but you don't know what a dick I am. So here's an interesting thing. So around the school of therapy is very much like, in, when it comes to relationships, communicate your needs to the other person and then have them met, which is very dependent on the other person changing. And that's very different to the world of coaching, where it's like, set boundaries and like walk away, but don't try and change anyone else. It's like you take all the responsibility, which is where the like functioning, non-functioning comes in. So like if I was to coach someone on wanting to create a better relationship, it wouldn't involve the other person at all. Mm. It would involve like you creating it. In saying that, so that would be me coaching them. But on the flip side, how I could coach you is like, what are your thoughts about them? How do you feel towards them? Do you want, like, how do you want to feel towards them in terms of like open, trusting, curious, excited, instead of like, how do you want to think so that you're on the same team? It's not going to impact, like, you're not responsible for their feelings. The reason I think this is the reason why this is a difference in coaching is because of the like functioning, non-functioning, and like, it's very empowering. This is the same way I speak about anxiety, right? It's like, it's not something that happens to you. You have an element of control. That's not true for everyone, right? Some people do have like a really high disorder. My work is not for them. But yeah, that's what I would say is like, you show up as your authentic self. You right. can't, like, you're not going to change for a podcast host. I'm not going to tell you what to do. And your brain's going to be like, all right, I guess we'll do it. Otherwise, I'd just tell you to stop procrastinating. It would be done.
And I try to explain. One of them was a friend of mine for like a good decade. And I tried to explain that the podcast is not necessarily real life. Although we are speaking about real life or it's a reality-based podcast, like me on the podcast is not me off the podcast. There's a little right. bit of a difference. And I think it's interesting that you said communicating, because first I asked an author, is the first person I interviewed, and they basically said to communicate. And then a psychology major said to communicate. And now you're saying to communicate. So I love that this theme is just continuing to run.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I definitely could answer the question about how I feel about both of them, but I will not.
Bye.
Instead, I will say thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being open and honest about all the questions and not being annoyed by me, just giving your timeline of your whole entire life and asking you questions about it. I enjoyed having you here, and I hope everyone enjoys your accent and everything else.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, this is an episode where I'm like, will I share that? Where will I share this one? This was quite personal.
Oh, really? So normally you would really share.
I'll share it on my Facebook, don't worry. But I'll share it a few places, but I don't know if I'll share it on my LinkedIn. Let's put it like that.
Oh, your LinkedIn, huh? Kidding. But thank you so much for being here. And I hope you stop by again, because this was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me and asking me interesting questions.
No problem. If you would like to find out more about Vicki Louise coaching, go on over to VickiLouise.com, VickiLouise.com. Get yourself some life coaching. She was open and honest in this interview. You can tell that she knows what she's talking about. So head on over. If you need some help, get some help. It's not just about being completely hopeless. It's also about improving your already functioning self. You heard her say it. Now, after the break, we're going to promo the next guest. Here's what we're going to do. Since these interviews are a little shorter than my long form show, we're going to go ahead and do Mondays and Fridays. So there will be two episodes a week, and that's fun. So we have this one coming out right now. Right this very second on a Monday, and then the next one will be coming on a Friday. So let's have a little commercial break and then promo the next guest.
Raven hates Julie.
And for that reason, this episode is brought to you by Raven.
Julie had it coming.
Thank you, Raven, for being a friend of the main host of the show.
Now back to the show.
So we have Danielle Sundberg coming up, and she is a Reiki master currently. You know, she started as a lawyer, did a bajillion years of schooling to become a lawyer, was very successful at it. And we sat down and talked to her, spoke about where the transition came from. Yeah, we talked about her waffle maker and if she still has it. We talked about her husband. We talked about a lot of things. And you know what? Just get ready for that episode coming out on Friday. Have a good one, everyone. This has been a lot of fun. Goodbye.
Well, that was an awful show. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week to find out if we're canceled. Until then, this has been Am I Canceled?